This is Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app and 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Try to put on the show.
Russell Wilson was asked at last week's Pro Bowl in Orlando about what the team needs. And the quote, which I first saw, was first relayed in Bob Condotta's story on Saturday in the Seattle Times, said, quote, "I think we need a couple more." Talking about players. "I think we need a couple more. Jadeveon is a big-time guy that we would love to get back on our football team. He was so good in the locker room. He brought so many just havoc plays to the field. Hopefully we can get a few other players there on the defense." It's as pointed as Russell Wilson, I would say, has ever been about the roster. It's the first time that I've heard him intimate that there's a need to make additions, and it's more than just, hey, we're going to get better and we're going to keep improving. And it's also sound that we haven't been able to find yet. We'll get into that in just a second. I don't disagree with what he's saying, but I don't know if a quarterback, no, I don't think a quarterback should be talking about what the roster needs.
It's very strange to hear him as the one that is asking for more toys, because as you described, and in my time following Russell Wilson, this is very out of character for him to publicly ask for. And maybe it has something to do with his exit interview, as Bob laid out, about how in said exit interview, he was talking about the quarterbacks that have had successful second halves of their careers between years 8 and years 13 specifically. So maybe that's what he has currently on his mind. I want to maximize every single opportunity I can the next couple of years to win a title. But it's a strange ask, because it seems pointed to the point where he's looking for guys that can help immediately. He is looking for free agent help. And that, I think, can find you in some very, very dangerous waters if you're not careful.
Read a little bit more of the quote. "Then, also on offense, we have a great offense, but I think we can always add more pieces. I think that's going to be the part that's going to be great with John Schneider and Pete as well in terms of this offseason's free agency. Free agency is a very, very key to getting those superstars on your team and try to get great players that can fill the space," end quote. I don't disagree with anything he's saying. I wonder if free agency is the best way to go about that. I don't disagree with the point that he's saying. I don't think he should be saying it. I would say that he has much more room. I wouldn't mind if the quarterback said, hey, look at Tom Brady and the first 10 years of his career where they were a defense-oriented, run the ball, and then they transitioned their offense and built it around the quarterback. I think we can do that here. I would feel better about that than I do about him making comments about the rest of the roster, because it blends so quickly. And here's the danger of it. It blends so quickly. Well, if you didn't make so much money, it would be easier for them to add those pieces.
Ooh, that's a great point. I really enjoy the last part of this quote, because this is something that you do when you're trying to butter somebody up to get them to do
something. Tell them how great they are.
Oh, this will be great with John Schneider and Pete Carroll. He's trying to grease the skids. You know what? I don't blame him from that standpoint. And I do really like the idea of looking at your offense and saying, we could be better. We could always add pieces to a unit that at times was by far the team's best unit, and despite some pass protection issues, is, I think, very, very good. And not just because of Russell Wilson, because of Tyler Lockett, because of DK Metcalf, because of the running back core that they had, and because they've somehow been able to get pretty good production out of whatever tight end they put in there, whether it's Will Disley or Jacob Hollister, who was on a practice squad at the beginning of the year. I like that kind of concept. I don't hate hearing him say this. At least he's being open with it. I mean, it's not like he's hearing
it.
You hate it.
I kind of hate it. Yeah, and I don't want it, because he didn't put a point on it. Like, it wasn't like, this is what we need right now. It's delivered in Russell Wilson, but I hate the underlying message. I hate the underlying message for this reason. It is a criticism of the guys that are here that he's playing with, and I don't think players are the best equipped to make those decisions about how you add guys and who you need. And unless you're going to take less money, unless you're going to, if you take the perspective of, I'm going to maximize my earning potential, part of that decision is, okay, I trust those guys. You cede control in my mind. Like, you get less of an input on who else they can afford because you've made it so they can't afford as many other guys.
100%. He has definitely made it a little bit more difficult. He's 31 years old, and I think one of the reasons that this quote came out might be because he's thinking long and hard about the second half of his career and how he would probably, much like Tom Brady, like to build his brand on being a successful athlete in his late 30s, perhaps into his early 40s. But why now? Why now is he changing who he's always been into a person who is actually demanding things, at least based off of reading this, out of the organization?
Because he's looking and seeing what we all see, which is that defense was an albatross, that defense was dead weight, and saying that the defense has got to get better, and wondering if we have another draft class, even if it's a first round pick and 2 second round picks, is that going to be enough to push us over the top to the point where we can have a defense that doesn't weigh us down, that is able to hold on to leads? It's perfectly rational what he's saying. I just don't think that a player on the roster, even the quarterback, should be saying it.
Interesting. I mean, he is the most important player on the roster, and I'm not saying you bend over backwards to make him happy, but we don't disagree with anything that he said, did we? I mean, we all
you shouldn't
think,
be saying it.
But we don't disagree. We don't disagree at all. Is it really the end of the world? Are right now John Schneider and Pete Carroll thinking to themselves, come on, Russ? Or are they thinking, yeah, well, we know this, and this is something that we're doing, and this is something that we've talked to Russ about? I mean, I would tend to think it's the latter. I don't think he would just come out of nowhere with this. Don't you think he would say this if he had a little bit of insight of knowledge as to, yeah, they're going to resign Jadeveon Clowney, and yeah, they're going to go and be a little bit aggressive in March?
He's saying it because he wants to at least subtly apply a little pressure, right? And I'm not saying it's some sort of Machiavellian plot. This is about as tame, this is about as demure as a request for additional players can possibly be. This is the smilingest, happiest sort of request, and I don't want to make it... He's not demanding anything. But this is him with one foot on the other side of the lane that players should be in, which is, hey, you know what? You're not in player acquisition. And unless you're taking a below-market deal, I'm not sure how much room you have to even tell them how they should spend their other money. Because, first of all, I think players are terrible GMs, and I think LeBron James is probably the best example of that. Players, by and large, tend to be terrible GMs because they don't see career arcs the way that a personnel person sees it. They see a guy who's really good right now, and they assume he's always going to be that good. They don't understand the long-term repercussions of free agency. And quite frankly, free agency, the benefits that you get right away tend to evaporate pretty quickly, and they're not necessarily as good. I don't think players are good GMs, but more and above and beyond that, it's just the idea of, look, your job as a player is to perform as well as you can and bring out the best around the guys that are with you. I don't know how this lends itself to any of those goals, to at least subtly trying to pressure, unless you think that your front office is so cheap that they need shame, that they need shame to propel them into making acquisitions.
Man, I don't know if I look into it as quite that far, because I think if he was trying to be general manager, Danny, he would be like, let's think of a theoretical example. We know he's close with Jake Heaps. He would be like, all right, make Jake Heaps the backup quarterback, right? would it be something like that, like where he's bringing all his friends in?
You don't need to bring Jake into this.
Listen,
Jake has just been reeled into a boring debate. Listen, and now he's part of he's between the rock and the hard place of the demanding quarterback and the radio host who's angry about the demands that are being made.
I'm not angry about the demands, but imagine if that's what Russell Wilson was, where he's like, hey, let's give Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, LeBron James style, a contract. And you're like, wait a second, what? That guy's still in the NBA? Why are we giving him a contract? Oh, we're paying him $10 million or whatever they're ending up paying him. It's one of those things where Russell Wilson isn't asking for anything specific, and he isn't asking for anything crazy. He's saying the obvious, and it's not like he has left a list of specific guys and is playing general manager here. He is basically saying, hey, guys, go to the grocery store. Thank you. Like, that's it. I have no problem with this. I agree with him, and I hope that this maybe does apply a little bit of pressure for one specific thing. They need to re-sign Jadeveon Clowney. They need to bring him back.
I agree with you on that. And I don't think that this is something awful, but I see a toe over the line here. That's what I see. I see a toe over the line, and Paul to be the person. It's a slippery slope next thing. Honestly, I don't think Russell's going to be some sort of demanding diva behind the scenes saying, hey, this is what you should do personnel-wise. But I think in general, and I think as a policy, I don't think it's good for a quarterback to be saying things like this. The part that's funny is we can't actually find the audio. we're looking really hard.
I am speaking to several high-ranking members at ESPN about this audio who have yet to be able to locate it either, but it's going to happen.
Now, so it's cited in Bob Condotta's story, and he has a link to a video. It goes to YouTube, and it's an account called NFL First Take, which is not a show.
Right.
First Take is a show, but NFL First Take is not a show, and this is not the show's official page.
And it's like a one-second video, and the headline is all jumbled and just looks like an absolute mess. It basically looks like someone maybe stumbled to their computer at, I don't know, 1:30 in the morning after having a couple and just put a headline in. It's a bunch of gibberish.
But we're not doubting Bob Condotta. We know that he heard this somewhere because he's a good reporter.
He is, and he's got the transcript, and there's a picture in the one-second clip on YouTube. There's a picture of Russell sitting at what looks to be an ESPN set at the Pro Bowl. We very much believe it exists. We just can't get our hands on it. We're going to be continuing to try to play junior detectives and track that down. It is Danny and Gallant. Right now, it's time to tell you what to watch for.
What to watch for every morning at 7:10. Brought to you by Dubin Law Group. The first look at the stories worth watching today with Danny and Gallant.
Lakers were scheduled to play the Clippers tonight, and there was a decision made to postpone the game, which, given the fact of the emotional reaction that players on both teams have had, I saw Paul George did not play last night. Guys so choked up and just distraught, grieving over Kobe Bryant's death, that game will be postponed. Here's a clip from Mike Breen, who was getting emotional before he called a game yesterday.
Welcome back to Madison Square Garden, where the Knicks and Nets will play on this unbelievably sad day for the NBA. And Claude, on my way into the arena, I thought of Bill Gallo. Gallo is the legendary sports cartoonist that when Thurman Munson passed away, the next day he had an unbelievably touching cartoon. And it was his two characters that he had, Basement Bertha and Yucky. And the cartoon read, Basement Bertha saying, "No, Yucky, I just don't feel like playing ball today." And she was crying. And that's the way I think a lot of us feel here tonight. Just don't feel like broadcasting. I know a lot of the players, don't feel like playing. It's just a sad, sad day.
It's really hard to hear anyone continue to talk about it, and it's also really difficult to understand why the NBA decided to play games on Sunday, why they decided to play games on Monday. And I do still believe that Kobe probably would have wanted these games to be played and that there was some sort of therapeutic element to all of them. But for a guy who really inspired this entire practically generation of basketball players, to be lost like that and to make those guys go back on the court, that's a really tough ask. I know they're getting paid millions of dollars, but I would not want to be in their shoes.
What to watch for?
All right, well, I'll see if the Dogs can figure things out. Huskies basketball hosts Arizona Thursday, and all eyes are going to be on Jaden McDaniels, who played 2 minutes in the second half of last Saturday's loss at Arizona. How did those 2 minutes go? A turnover, a missed shot, two fouls, an offensive foul, and then he was substituted out of the game. He did not return for the final 16 minutes of this one. Danny, how do you think this one's going to play out? Because this is a real challenge for Mike Hopkins and this young Husky squad.
Each side has a question to answer. For Hopkins, it's how hard line is he going to be here? It's clear that a young, high-profile recruit has not gone sideways, but there's been difficulties there, and he's not getting what he wants out of the player. How hard line is he going to be? Is it going to be a, you've got to toe the line exactly, or is this going to be an incremental, let's get you back on board? For Jaden McDaniels, he's an extraordinarily talented player who is going to have a professional future, maybe as soon as next year. What does he want out of his college experience? I hope that they find some common ground here, and that usually when that happens, it's taking incremental steps. I think there's room for both to get a great outcome here. But I think both sides have a question. And if I was Hopkins, I would look at it very seriously of how much do I really bend for a guy who might not be back next year? And if he feels that he hasn't bought in, I think I would say be more of a hardline approach than some sort of making concessions to get what you can out of McDaniels.
Really, the question is, how do you view the year? Do you view it as a lost cause right now? Or do you say to yourself, you know what, we can still salvage something out of McDaniels? Very interesting to see what will happen.
What to watch for?
Well, Super Bowl spotlight has shifted, and talk about this a little bit later in the show. There's nobody who's going to have more at stake in this game, in my mind, than Andy Reid, the coach of the Chiefs. And there's no one who is more beloved in this game than Chiefs coach Andy Reid. How can you dislike a man who has a preference for Hawaiian shirts and explains it thus?
Andy, what are you doing?
Loves Tommy Bahama. He's a big fan of Tommy.
They're great for big guys. Tommy Bahama must have had a big grandfather. Yeah, it is. I love Tommy Bahama, yeah. Comfortable.
Must have had a big grandfather. Listen, they're very comfortable shirts. As someone who is a big fan of, I think they're Hawaiian shirts. They might be Florida shirts, whatever the case. I like a nice little button down that's comfy, it's breezy, and it's got some cool designs on it. It's a way of life, man.
We'll talk about Andy Reid a little bit more and why he's got so much on the line. That is what to watch for. We now check down in South Florida, Miami, the morning drive with the professor on the other side of the country.
John Clayton's Morning Drive with Danny and Gallant.
It's a four-way battle, and there's only going to be three spots. Somebody has to go.
The first and final word on everything NFL from the professor, John Clayton.
Presented by Infinity of Tacoma at 5.
They scored 30 points a game. They're the best running team in football.
It's John Clayton's Morning Drive with Danny and Gallant.
Good morning, professor.
Good morning. How are you?
Doing very well. Very curious as to how your first... Your Miami media night experience was last night. What was your biggest highlight?
Leaving. First off, it was the biggest crowd at the Marlins park probably in 3 years because, there's actually people in the seats, which they don't have for baseball games, and the field was just covered. But there wasn't a lot of room. It was noisy. You really couldn't hear much as far as even some of the people on the podium. So, I ended up staying for the Chiefs part of it, and we left at the beginning part of the 49ers part of it. But, it's great for the fans. The biggest thing is it's a primetime show, East Coast. It gives the fans a chance to hear what the players are saying. I mean, unfortunately, from the media standpoint, it's hard to hear what anybody's saying because it was so loud and noisy and all that stuff. But, again, hey, they're taking care of the fans on this one, not necessarily the media, and we care about the fans.
Professor, Andy Reid, I think, is going to have, in some ways, the most at stake. It's been 15 years since he was in the Super Bowl. He is a coach with incredible regular season success. He's had some postseason accomplishments, too. But if he wins a Super Bowl, it immediately vaults him into a conversation at a different tier of coaches. Do you think he's got the most on the line of anybody that's here?
Yeah, but of course, I mean, one thing is, if he doesn't win it this year, he's still going to have a chance to come back in the next couple of years because he's got Patrick Mahomes. So it's like there's pressure on him. But again, if he loses the game, still you wouldn't panic. But I think everything's in his corner right now to win. He's got Mahomes. He's got the fastest receiving core in football. He's got Travis Kelce. He's got it all. And so you know that the 49ers come in with a good running game, the good defense and all that. But I think the advantage still goes to Andy. Remember, he's been through 28 of these games. This will be his 29th as far as playoff games and his second Super Bowl. This is the third playoff game for Kyle Shanahan as a head coach and his first Super Bowl. So I think the advantage still goes to Andy, plus he has Patrick Mahomes.
You mentioned Kyle Shanahan, and if you go back to Kyle Shanahan's last time in a Super Bowl, Super Bowl 51, he was offensive coordinator of the Falcons. Many would argue that since he didn't call off the dogs, the Patriots were able to rally from that 28-3 deficit and ultimately win the Super Bowl. Do you think that there's any extra pressure on him in this game? We know he'll probably, as a young coach, he's got plenty of chances to get back in this game. Still, though, I imagine that's got to be in the back of his mind.
I don't think there's any extra pressure on him because, he learned from that bad Super Bowl experience. And you notice it showed last week in the Green Bay game because he got too cute, when he was ahead. And then, of course, he made the major mistakes of bad play calls that gave the Patriots the chance to come back and win the game late. But you notice, he didn't stop. He didn't But when he got the running game going, Mike Pettine of the Green Bay Packers, the defensive coordinator, didn't make any adjustments. He just said, fine, I'm just going to keep running the ball until you stop me. That's where he learned. And that's the value of having a second-generation coach, a guy that's learning and getting better and better and better. But no, I think that, I mean, he's got to look at this as a bonus. Hey, a year ago, he was coaching in the Senior Bowl because he was the second worst team in football. Now he's in the Super Bowl. Hey, he's on good borrowed time. And he's also, it's like he's way ahead of the game.
Professor, what's worse, Packers run defense or their cybersecurity? They were one of what's almost like a dozen teams that got hacked yesterday by something called OurMine, and they were being held hostage. I think the NFL's actual Twitter account was hacked as well. I found it to be hilarious. I'm sure that the NFL doesn't find it as laughable as I do, though.
Yeah, I saw the release, so I guess we're seeing a lot of hacking going on right now. I mean, so, yeah, you have to feel – I think their defense had holes, but, of course, the hackers were able to get into the whole cyber thing. So, yeah, I think Packers and others have to worry about that.
How would the two of you grade your passwords? Do you feel comfortable with your passwords right now?
Oh, yeah. I've got two-step verification.
Ooh.
You got to get a log into my account. You got to get access to a code from the phone. Yeah.
Oh, wow. What, is this Mission Impossible?
No, because I got hacked by some Russian floozy. One of the accounts, Jess was there. Like, we needed to, like, all of a sudden there was somebody without pants on. Yeah. There was somebody without pants on that was posting on from the Didimon 710 account. Yeah, it was uncomfortable for everybody.
That was wonderful. I really enjoyed that day.
Interesting. A fun hacking story. John, I'm guessing you don't have a fun hacking story in the rearview mirror.
No, I'm staying out of that.
Okay. Oh, good for you. I would like to stay out of the being hacked game myself.
Yeah.
I think Kareem Hunt needs to try to stop getting in trouble. And once again, we are seeing Kareem Hunt, who obviously had that video outside of an elevator, a couple of other incidents around that time, a six-month frame before he signed with the Cleveland Browns. And since he's been with the Cleveland Browns, he has not been able to keep things clean. And yesterday there was a video on TMZ showing him getting pulled over. There were trace amounts of marijuana in the car. He told a police officer that he would fail a drug test if he had to take it. He started whining and sort of crying about how life has just been hard on him over the last couple of years. What do you think is going to happen to Kareem Hunt here? Do you feel that, first off, the NFL will give him a suspension?
I think there's a chance of a suspension. I really do.
How about the Browns looking at him going forward? Do you think that they could potentially release him?
I think they'll stand by him because he's too talented. He helps that two-back offense, so I think that they'll stand by him and not do anything.
Be interesting. Are you surprised at the Browns? They've got they just hired 32-year-old general manager. That's going to be paired with Kevin Stefanski. Are you surprised by any of the steps they've taken this offseason?
No, he's been there. They didn't get the guy that they wanted because they wanted George Payton. He pulled out. Andrew, I think, did. He's one of the bright young guys in the league. So I think they came out okay on that one.
John, we always appreciate your time. It is great to talk to you, and we're really looking forward to having you with us this whole week from down there in Miami.
Okay, sounds good.
That is the professor, John Clayton, with the Morning Drive. I think it'll be interesting to see how kind of the week progresses in the different storylines. Right now, it certainly feels like that it's two teams that are very happy to be there, which is always an interesting characterization. There's no sort of baseline animosity toward either team. In fact, both of the coaches seem fairly likable, and kind of the organizations that are just, this is a huge accomplishment for them. I'll be interested to see how this changes over the course of the week.
Right. And I mean, look, I'm not going to lie. I would like to see a certain someone perhaps feel that he is being slighted as we get closer and closer to game time. Maybe he gets a little chirpy. Maybe he starts acting that like he still has the kind of speed to maybe cover someone like Tyreek Hill. It has been an interesting couple of days. It has been very quiet as well, Danny. I do get that same vibe as you.
So it seems like you're talking about Richard Sherman, who is going to be a storyline, and Paul has a very specific finish that he envisions happening. We'll talk about that next here on Danny and Gallant.
You are listening to Danny and Gallant,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios
on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
I think Super Bowl 54 is going to be a rough one for Richard Sherman. Kansas City's speed on offense has been a matchup nightmare for pretty much every team in the league all year, and honestly, for the last couple of seasons. So Why isn't it going to be that way against an older Richard Sherman, Danny, who we once saw on a Thursday night get absolutely dusted downfield after not necessarily being in coverage on a route by one Andy Isabella, who I still am not 100% sure about any other details about.
We also saw Devontae Adams, right? Run behind him in the Packers game.
We did.
Look, you're speaking my language here. The problem is I've been waiting for 2 years for this to happen. I've been telling myself he had slowed down 2 years ago. I've been telling myself that he's going to get beat. And you know what happens every single time? Nobody throws at him. Nobody throws at him. They don't test him. They don't try him. They stay away from him. And he's like, I hope you're right, because there is a part of me that wants to see it. I certainly don't want to see a dominant game in which the 49ers defense crushes the Chiefs in much the same way the Seahawks demolished the Broncos, and then afterward having to listen to all the comparisons and Richard gloat about where he is. I don't know if I have this, but I've stopped waiting for it to happen because I just don't know if it's possible. Kind of like how I don't think Marshawn Lynch can get the ball at the one with the game on the line and score a touchdown. I think things, you'll get a delay of game. You'll get an inexplicable coaching. Like, something will happen. The order of the universe has just decided that, okay, that's not going to happen. Apparently Richard Sherman getting hung out to dry is not going to happen either.
It's interesting though, because look, he's had a good season this year. No one can deny that, but we have looked at this 49ers secondary before this year, and we have questioned their speed specifically. And you are now looking at a quarterback in Patrick Mahomes who has the ability to escape the pocket and has the ability to really make any throw on the field. He should be able to challenge Richard Sherman. Now, I'm hoping that he would be careful while challenging Richard Sherman and not doing any of those no-look shenanigans in the Super Bowl. Sorry, don't want to deal with any of that because it could lead to an interception or a missed wide-open touchdown. But with all of the speed that Kansas City has, yeah, maybe Tyreek Hill won't be lining up at the same side of the field as Richard Sherman all game long, but Sammy Watkins is going to be out there, and some of the other receivers that Kansas City has, Mecole Hardman, DeMarcus Robinson, are just as fast. And I really wonder if Kansas City can give Mahomes just a little bit of time, or if Mahomes can extend plays. I feel like they're going to be able to pick this 49ers secondary apart. And it's not necessarily an indictment on the 49ers secondary. This is just what Kansas City has done all year long and all of last year, too.
I hope that we see a higher scoring game because I want to see the pressure put on Jimmy Garoppolo. I want to see how, in my mind, the big unanswered question for the San Francisco 49ers is, do they have a quarterback that can erase a double-digit deficit in the second half? Like, do they have that guy? And I know that there have been points, and it's not like he's a complete caretaker, but when it comes down to that situation, do they have the guy that's capable of doing that? And the key to that happening is Kansas City's offense being able to move the ball and be effective. We've seen it's the most potent offense in the league, right? If the Ravens were the most efficient, yeah, the Chiefs are the most potent. We saw them erase a 24-point lead.
They scored 42 straight points against the Texans, and it was only in two quarters.
What's the easiest, quickest way to hobble a high-powered offense? It's pass rush, right? Like, it is the thing more than anything else that will, and we've seen it for years or saw it for years with Peyton Manning, is when an opponent could get pass pressure on him, specifically up the middle, kind of the most direct path to the quarterback, you can absolutely hobble that kind of offense. I don't think Kansas City runs the ball all that well. I think everything goes through their quarterback, and their quarterback's more mobile. He's not a running quarterback, but he's mobile. But he's probably not as mobile as he was last year after the knee injury earlier this season.
That he dislocated his knee earlier this year and still had that touchdown round against the Tennessee Titans where he looked cat-like, so nimble on that play, really surprises me. And I have no idea what Kansas City's medical staff may have done with this knee. Perhaps Patrick Mahomes is actually a cyborg. Who knows? What I do know is that he has not looked affected by it at all. And I think that he would be able to escape that pressure up the interior. It is weird, Danny, because you're right. They have no running game to speak of. Like, they have two guys that have a DA at the beginning of their first name in Williams in their running back core over the course of the season. In fact, someone in my fantasy football league drafted the worst of which because he didn't know which one was which. And this year it's been the same thing, essentially, where you don't know who they're going to throw out there at running back. They haven't needed it. And I think that they're going to be able to have that same success against this 49er defense, whether it's Richard Sherman that they target or somebody else. And I wonder how we're going to be looking at Richard Sherman after this game as well. Because we talk about the legacy for someone like Andy Reid. Well, for someone like Richard Sherman, he took a big-time chance leaving the Seahawks, where he's been for a long time. And obviously, there was a mutual parting of ways there. But for him to take a chance and play for a team in his own division, the same NFC West division, and on top of that, to try to spearhead a revival for this 49ers defense, I'm curious as to how people in this city look at that and how people here also view what he's been able to do this season. If they miss Richard Sherman, if they miss having someone of his caliber on the football field.
I miss Richard Sherman. I miss having him here. I don't think it would have worked had he stayed here. I think it was time for him to go. I miss him. And it's impossible to look at the Seattle defense and think that, hey, you know what? Could they use a cornerback like him? Yeah, absolutely they could. I just don't think it would have worked had he stayed here, because it was a candle that was being burnt at both ends, and there was no wax left. Oh. Like he had actually had all of the rivalries outside the team, and now it was starting to move toward the inside of the team. I really enjoyed Richard Sherman. I really enjoyed watching him. I thought that for better and for worse, he was a great Seahawk. I thought by the end that his need to find an opponent had turned inward, and he was finding opponents within the locker room. And once that happens, it's really, unless you can get that player to kind of back down and say, okay, I need to change my approach. And I don't think Richard Sherman's built that way. And I think the moment that showed that was when he openly questioned the team throwing a pass from the 1 yard line because it almost got picked off in a Thursday night game against the Rams. Afterward, he explained why he was mad about that. Afterwards, everybody's like, oh my gosh. I mean, that's basically insubordination. You have someone who's saying that we don't trust you to be able to throw the ball from the one. I mean, that disrupts all sorts of lines from play. He talks to the coach. The coach says, I think that you'll hear from Richard again. He comes back and he says the exact same thing. At that point, like, he can't admit he was wrong. And when you have someone that can't admit they're wrong, it's really hard to get them to sort of back on track. Once they crossed that line, it was crossed, and I thought they got everything out of him. I miss him, yes. I do hope that he gets matched up against Tyreek Hill and ends up 5 yards behind Hill as he runs back there. I just know that for 2 years I've been waiting for that, and it hasn't ever happened. So maybe this is just one more opportunity for him to prove everyone wrong. And he's like, yep, sitting there waiting for that. You're going to be waiting for a long, long time.
He had an interesting piece with Tyler Dunn of the Bleacher Report, who's done a couple of them with Richard Sherman this season, and I don't know if they'll continue. I hope they do. There was a funny moment. You mentioned that fuel, that motivation that he looks for, and Dunn asked him about it, and Sherman says it's easy to find that fuel, but he didn't want to talk about it, and Tyler kept on poking. I'll keep it to myself. Kept poking. Oh, there's a ton of it. And then he brought up Darrell Revis, and he's like, yeah, that's what jealousy does to you. Then all of a sudden, Richard was unleashed. It's fantastic. I look at him, and I understand that it probably wouldn't have worked out, and that he probably would not have been a happy camper over these last two seasons. And I know that he also got beat by Devontae Adams for a touchdown in the NFC Championship game. I still can't help but think that this team would still be playing right now if it had a better cornerback. And that's going to be something that's always going to be difficult to stomach, especially now that Richard Sherman has helped the San Francisco 49ers turn things around to a point where they got a chance of winning a Super Bowl.
You know where Richard Sherman's going to be if you're the Chiefs, right? The template of their defense. Would you try and spotlight him, or would you go away from him? If you know you've got a corner who's his top line speed, like his acceleration has always been sort of the question of he's not a burner. He's not a burner as a cornerback, but longer distances of speed. Like, I think he's a better 100-yard runner than he is a 400-yard or 40-yard runner. Would you try and isolate him against some of your quicker players?
I'd want to see how those situations are handled. If Tyreek Hill is out on the outside and is allowed to run nine routes and just run straight up the field, what kind of help are they going to be giving Richard Sherman on plays like that? Or even on plays where he fakes one of those, like they just run a hook or something like that. How much help is going to be paid to Tyreek Hill? By the way, should be help at all times for someone like Tyreek Hill. But if for whatever reason San Francisco's like, yeah, we're fine, I mean, it's going to happen. And I could easily see it happening, because I think that that's their big problem on San Francisco's defense, is that the secondary speed, it just is not there. And, I mean, you need to have elite-level speed to beat someone like Kansas City. Danny and Gallant with Danny O'Neill and myself, Paul Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle, our playoff coverage brought to you by Washington Farm Bureau Healthcare. Coming up next, NFL Media Night was last night, and Danny has an interesting take on this. It's an interesting night. We've all experienced it, so we're going to talk about our experiences from it. Coming up next, don't go anywhere.
You're listening to Danny and Gallant.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
I don't hate Media Day. I hate the stories about Media Day. And I think it's improved a little bit. Because for a good 10 to 15 years, there was a cottage industry of every year when you went to the Super Bowl on that Tuesday, which is when the media day used to be, it was, let's write a story about all the crazy things that happen at media day. And oh my gosh, can you believe the Telemundo reporter dressed up in a wedding dress to talk to Tom Brady? And here was this guy who was a ventriloquist. And it got to the point where I'm like, it was a spectacle. And then it was such a spectacle that everybody wrote stories about it. And now the stories about the spectacle are so programmed that people are creating a spectacle to fulfill the expectations of the stories. And I hated it, Paul. I absolutely hated it. And as my little act of civil disobedience, I have never in 20 years of covering the NFL and professional sports in general, I've never written a, wow, zany media day story.
What? You don't like all the zaniness that goes on there? I like seeing true love happen right before my eyes, someone proposing to Tom Brady. It's just a story of honest, faithful love, man.
I personally always enjoyed the guy only wearing a bucket. That was fun.
Yeah.
There's always someone doing something crazy, and that's the only reason they go. But Danny, it's a whole week of coverage. We need something outside of the game.
No, we don't need that. We don't. There needs to be. Let me make this clear. In today's society, we need to offer no encouragement for people to behave like morons. In fact, we need to actively discourage people from
that. But what if they're funny when they're being morons?
No, they're generally not. And that line between funny once and like silly twice, and then the third time, you're like, all right, now you're just taking liberties with everybody's time. You're an absolute waste of air with some of the stuff that you're doing. We don't need it. We have an entire reality television, like an entire corner of the entertainment industry is built around people behaving like morons. And we need to control this and not encourage it.
It's
like showing streakers. Why don't we show streakers during sporting events? Because then everybody would stop dropping trowel and running around if they're like, here's a way for me to get attention. So we've made a calculated decision as a society, which I agree with, by the way, which is don't reward them with attention.
Yeah, that's an interesting way of going about things. There have to be some things that happen that entertain you. There have to be some. Like, I understand that the large avalanche of all of these people that are essentially doing the same thing for us, people that are looking for content every day, makes us say, okay, this is stupid. But there has to be at least some part of it that you looked at in the past and you're like, oh, that's pretty funny. Maybe I could do something creative.
I enjoyed Melissa Ford, who I believe at the time, I believe she worked for BET, and she was a host. Watching players interact around her, she was strikingly beautiful, like really strikingly beautiful. And I remember Max Starks, who was an offensive tackle from the Pittsburgh Steelers, kind of hovering around. He looked a lot like I looked around members of the opposite sex when I was in college, which was kind of want to be close, but don't have the courage to actually engage. So you just kind of hover within the immediate vicinity to give yourself the option.
Yeah, yep.
Seeing a 325-pound man kind of intimidated by a woman's overall presence and beauty, that was really funny to see. Like, that was watching people who were actually, like, professional athletes being starstruck by someone. I enjoyed seeing that, like, the tables being turned and like these guys, like, giddy little school children.
I enjoyed the moments where an athlete is just done with the entire circus of the week. There really doesn't need to be 2 weeks leading up to a Super Bowl. The game is big enough now where the game takes care of itself. I've always been a little annoyed by that wait for the Super Bowl right after conference championship week. You don't need 2 weeks for it. Play the game.
Oh, yeah, you do.
No.
Oh, you certainly need 2 weeks.
Did you need 2 weeks for the college football national championship?
No, you don't need it for that. But for the Super Bowl, if you have the Super Bowl right after the conference championship games, it's too quick.
But you used to have it all the time.
No, we need to be there needs to be a buildup. It was worse when there was just 1 week. Nope, there needs to be a buildup and a proper anticipation. Yeah, we need a week's long worth. We just don't need media day.
Okay, media day we get rid of. I had fun last year on media day. But the amount of effort that I went into where I saw Bum Phillips dressed up in his essentially duster like his dad used to on the Houston Oilers sideline, I photoshopped a picture of myself wearing a duster, and then I showed Wade Phillips the duster at media night, and I said, can I pull this off? And he chuckled, and that was it. Ultimately, I thought it was going to be a lot more rewarding for the amount of effort that I put into it. So I am with you in that I don't necessarily need media night anymore either. But I do think every now and then there are some funny moments that come out of it.
Just your favorite media day? Because I remember you camping out for hours at a time. I think you were there front and center for Marshawn
Lynch. I'm just here so I don't get fined. For 1 hour, I stood pressed against that podium because the Patriots went first. And so I knew I could see them redoing the podium and putting Marshawn Lynch's name up. And I'm like, oh, man, I got to stand there for an hour in heels. And just so I could be front and center when only says those words, I'm just here so I don't get fined. I was in the picture, though, the aerial picture where you can see the entire throng of media around
him.
And I'm hysterically laughing because I thought it was really, really funny. That was fun for me.
That's why I like media night. I go back to that, and that's the problem. These moments don't happen enough to really say that, okay, media night's great, but seeing Marshawn Lynch as time wore on, especially when Deion Sanders was it Deion Sanders who was interviewing him towards
Sanders
the end?
Sanders was the 2013 Super Bowl, so against the Broncos, when it was like, I'm all about that action, boss.
Okay.
And then the next year was, I'm just here so I won't get fired.
Okay. I remember there were certain ex-players that came up to him and were really trying to get something out of him for, I'm just here so I don't get fined. And it felt like he wanted to talk, and he had a little smirk on his face. That moment was really funny for me. I enjoyed it a lot.
It is Danny and Gallant. Our playoff coverage is brought to you by Washington Farm Bureau Healthcare. We've got Brock Huer joining us. Is Russell Wilson right about Seattle needing a couple more stars? Well, actually, of course he is. Should he be saying it? We'll ask Brock next.